The Startup to Scale Up Game Plan is brought to you by Alpina Search, Europe's premier talent search firm, dedicated to helping technology startups and scale-ups recruit high-impact executives. Now over to your host, Gary Riemann.
So I'm pleased to welcome Hannah Meiten to this week's episode. Hannah's the founding partner at the Nordic SaaS venture capital fund Amply Ventures, and they invest in the Nordic's leading software and SaaS ventures. So Hannah, a very warm welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Gary.
Absolutely. Hannah, I'd like to start with a little background. How did you get interested in the world of venture capital, and why did you decide to launch Amply?
I think my road, as many that works into venture capital, is not a straight one. I never dreamed as a little girl becoming an investor. I'd be curious to hear if anyone does, but my background is that I come from the operating background. So I started working in a SaaS company even before they called it a SaaS. It was the early 2000s, and I started working in sales in London at a fast-growing Nordic company called Meltwater. And that journey took me to the US, where I spent 7 years essentially growing out commercial teams and organizations for the prior company I talked about, and then later at another company called Wildfire that during my tenure there got acquired by Google. And then that led me back to Europe and continuing my kind of career as an operator on fast-growing SaaS companies, essentially all in different roles, heading up sales, growth, customer success, and everything that is really driving and growing revenue side of it. During my time working as an operator, I also realized that I really enjoyed working with a number of other companies. So I started sitting on as a board of director in a few different other SaaS companies. And I found by connecting the dots and by sharing my experience and what I have done before, that was really useful to other companies, especially those in earlier phases. So I realized that I wanted to do that more. So I quit my day job and started combining consultancy and advisory and really, really helping a handful of SaaS founders and management teams with sharing my experience, operating competences. And then I was doing that with investing out of my own pocket. So very, very small form of angel investing. And I really enjoyed that. And I realized, actually, investing in companies and being a venture capital is really what I'm already doing. But if I continue to do what I'm doing, but just have a little bit of a deeper pockets, meaning I can invest larger amounts, then that is the kind of trusted advisor and owner that I want to do. That formed kind of the hypothesis of bringing Amply to life. And then, of course, I couldn't have done that without my co-founder and partner Adrian, which were kind of like yin and yang. Everything I know, he doesn't, and everything I don't know, he knows. So while we really shared the same common beliefs and true values, we work really aligned with the strong vision of we want to help as many SaaS founders as possible to really grow out the Nordic SaaS scene going forward.
So how tricky was it for you as a first-time VC? Okay, you'd done some angel investing. How tricky was it for you to raise a fund to get external investors to back you?
I don't think my fundraising is representative to how really, really challenging fundraising can be, because I was lucky enough to be able to get backed by another funding fund that I had worked along for many, many years and had also worked closely with my co-founder. So currently, our founders or our LPs is we have a big anchor investor who is a funding fund. It's an investment company called Avian Didriksson, which I had worked with for many, many years in the boardroom of the different companies that I had been. So they had seen me in action. We had a really close personal relationship. And then we have about 10 SaaS entrepreneurs and CEOs and founders who really, really I had known for years and had worked very closely with. So them investing in Amply was really, really built on trust in us as individuals. And I don't think that is representative to how most first-time founders go out and find the fundraising process, because I think it can be quite humbling. But for us, it was pretty easy, I would say. I'm going to regret those words in my next fundraising study.
Well, it's great to hear that the experience wasn't too painful for you. I'm curious about those SaaS investors that have backed you. Are they passive investors, or do they somehow help in an advisory way with some of the portfolio companies?
Great question. So to us, both Adriano and myself, we're extremely passionate about SaaS B2B, and we want to make sure that Amply Ventures is really reflecting that in everything we do and also in our structure. And we're also humble enough to realize that we're only two people. So we want to make sure that we amplify, pun intended, ourselves. And by doing that, we reached out to these SaaS CEOs and entrepreneurs and asked if they wanted to be backing us, but also backing the next generation of SaaS founders. And what that means that, yes, they have invested money into us and then they do so, but it also means that they are readily available for us and also our portfolio founders to, if and when they come across crossroads or areas where they have expertise or they have someone in their network that can guide them. It can be establishing, you know, a corporation in the UK. It can be setting a go-to-market strategy for the US. It can be something as database management skills, any kind of area where we can really help our companies through our network, they're there. With all respect that most of our high net worth LPs, they are busy driving their own successful SaaS companies. So they're pretty busy people. So we try to really, really only take their time when we know it's going to make a big difference to our founders.
And what's the Amply playbook for creating a successful international SaaS venture based out of the Nordics or indeed out of anywhere in Europe?
There's no right or wrong. But what we believe is that what we bring to the table is that outside view on really, really urging and challenging our founders to think big and to think globally from day one. And most of the companies which we invest in, they have built a product, they've established product market fit, they have succeeded and gotten some customers and revenue in typically their home market, or maybe their home market and an adjacent market, and they're ready to scale. And we come in then and really work closely with them on establishing what does that scalable journey look like? What are some of the go-to-market tactics in terms of what markets should we expand to? Should we expand to one at a time or many? How should we build out our team? How does the product vision look like? Basically, pricing and packaging, do we need to revise that to make sure that we fit into new markets? So there's no kind of playbook of this is how you do it, but there's some certain areas which for the seed phase are similar to SaaS companies, regardless of the segment that you operate in, where we think we can really bring some add value to the companies we invest in.
And let's talk about the current state of the world in terms of geopolitics. There's so much risk out there at the moment, the situation in the Middle East, the situation in Russia, Ukraine, and also potentially what might happen in Asia with the Chinese-Taiwan situation. How are Nordic Ventures, the ones in your portfolio, how are they navigating the heightened levels of geopolitical risk? And what are the implications for expansion outside of the Nordic region?
Well, I think regardless of geopolitical risk or timing, I think we really, really urge the founders that we work with to, first of all, know their business and know their metrics. So know what they should invest time and effort into that will really have a concrete return on investment. But having said that, obviously, you need to be aware of what's going on in the world, and you need to make sure that you try to think that two step ahead. And that might reflect into your expansion pace. It might be what markets you choose to not enter. And it might also have an implication to how you build out your team. So for example, one of the companies that we have invested in had parts of their development team in Russia when Russia decided to invade Ukraine. And suddenly, you know, the discussions in the boardroom that we had were something that I would never dreamed of having a few months earlier, right? And how can we make sure that we mitigate the risks associated with that and also set team members up for safety and the company up for success? So I think it's being aware of the world is constantly changing and how can we mitigate risks and how can we have an agile kind of strategy and plan to make sure that if certain things happen, we can quickly adjust.
Let's focus on AI. B2B SaaS was kind of flavor of the month or of the year for VC investment during the pandemic. And then things sort of took a turn away from B2B SaaS. And then VCs went pretty heavily into investing in AI. And there seems to be quite a bubble in that world at the moment. So to what extent do you look at companies that have an AI edge in their technology, in their solution?
So obviously it's AI and the quick development is really, really exciting. And we are constantly challenging ourselves to make sure that we follow these trends and we're being educated with the technology development that's happening. And we see how we see it right now is that we see AI as an enabler for driving efficiency as well as innovation. We speak to all of our founders to make sure that they are ensuring that their team is being educated on what's the latest AI technology developments. How can they utilize AI internally to increase efficiency and reduce mundane tasks that is not really adding value, as well as look for clear areas where they can strengthen their product to not just keep up with customer expectations, but also to drive innovation in their product to increase the moat of the company. When it comes to AI technology itself, I don't think that Ampli Venture is the right skilled investor to deem what area is going to be worth betting on. I think the technology is still developing at such an increasing pace that we look at what can we do internally to increase efficiency and what can you build into the product to increase its moat. But I myself is, of course, cautiously optimistic to see how this will really change the way that products are being built and new companies will evolve.
Have you had to walk away from possible investment opportunities because they were building a thesis around AI and you thought that they were hugely inflating the company's valuation?
Not necessarily. I mean, we have a set framework to how we value companies, and that is in essence a combination of obviously looking at the market and the market valuation, but more so looking at efficiency and growth. Since we're a SaaS investor, we apply a multiplier to the current annual recurring revenue, so the ARR. Obviously, you will have some boosting areas such as AI that might amplify it to the multiplier. We're not a moonshot investor. We do not look at opportunities where we feel like there is a increased valuation caused by a certain hype. From that point of view, yes, we certainly have turned off. But I think that when we have turned down such opportunity, it's probably because we feel like it's still to us a little bit unclear to what area of AI and to that will be the clear winners and what will just be commodities.
The tech industry gets a lot of criticism for its lack of diversity as the VC community. So
yes.
How do you ensure that your fund actively supports and invests in diverse founders and diverse teams?
So I think there's two ways. It's, of course, making sure that the methodology that in which how we review and look at companies are the same, regardless of the background and the genders and ethnicities of the founders. So we stay very, very agnostic from that point of view. And that I feel very confident. But then I think it's also about what kind of role do we have as investor and owners to, after we have done the investment, and what kind of change management can we drive? So we have a very set ESG strategy where gender and diversification is a big part of that. And we would never invest in a case which is, for example, to be very concrete, 100% male, where the team itself does not see that as a challenge or does not see that as something that they are eager to change to bring in a more of a gender diversity into the team. So we have certainly done investment where we have seen very few women, but we are very proud to say that after we have done the investment, we have brought in or changed that statistic. So for example, one company that we invested in, there was, I think, 10% female representation at the time of an investment. 1 year later, we have brought that up to 40%. We want to make sure that we have females in all positions of the company, from the board to the management team to the company in general. And it's more about really driving that understanding that, why is diversity important for us? Well, because we think it really builds more successful companies. It brings grit, resilience, and that's the kind of companies that we want to build and invest. All through my career as a female working in tech, 9 out of 10 times I've been the only female in the room. Then you have two options, to lean in or to back out, right? I've always felt that I can make a bigger difference by leaning in and being part of the discussion and bringing in and doing it a really good job, so I can bring in more precision and I can really pave the way there. And that's my investment philosophy as well.
When you face some really tough decisions that have kept you awake all night, several nights in a row, what are the toughest decisions you've had to take and how have you handled those situations as a VC? So during your still relatively short career in venture capital, walk me through one of those or a couple of those really tough decisions and how you've handled the situations.
Tough decisions are always about people, I think, because everything else is not that tough if you really challenge it. But tough decisions always involves other people's feelings and, of course, how you can change their destiny. In my operating role, it had to do with decisions around hiring and firing, or promotion or demotions. In my role as an investor, it comes down to that as well, making sure that you are as transparent as possible in discussions, in how you have led to certain decisions, whether that is around investing or not investing, continue to invest in a company or not continuing to invest. When I stay awake at night, it's because I think about people. It's about thinking about how can I make sure that my decisions is not causing other people's lack of sleep. My approach so far has been always try to be as open and transparent and communicative in explaining your expectations and your reasoning and why you have taken certain decision and what thoughts have led to that decision, and trying to be as human as possible.
I'm curious to learn a bit about your most recent investment. So even if it's one that's not been publicly disclosed.
Sure.
The most recent investment, in terms of what was compelling about that team, that company, that technology, why did you invest in them?
I think we invest in seed stage, which is rather early stage. I mean, you certainly have revenues, but typically the team is less than 10 people. It's founder-led sales. And a lot of the times, the management team or the key people team are also the founders. So as cliche as it sounds, we invest in people and we invest in individuals more so than products at this stage. Of course, the product needs to have a concrete solution to a pain problem, and you want to make sure that you validate that. But at this early stage, it might not always be the product that is the compelling reason for why we invest. It's often the founders and the founding team, which we feel are excited about this. They have grit. They have a clear vision of what they want to do. They're not actively looking for us as an investor to come in and needing our help, but they're very humble enough to realize that by listening to others that have done this before, they might learn something. So it's more of a wanting our input more than needing it. I always look for creativity as well. And creativity is more around how have they overcome challenges such as lack of money. We often invest in bootstrap companies. So you need to really make wine out of water, thinking about creative ways. And when you cannot invest in something with money and resources, how can you still test and validate hypothesis? How can you get in front of that customer that is impossible to reach? And how can you really, really stay close to your customer when you're only a very small team? So creative ways of solving problems, because that indicates that this team is a true problem solver, and they will find ways of overcoming any challenges that will come at them. And building out a company, regardless if you're an entrepreneur or operator in an early stage, one thing you can be really certain of, and that is that you'll need to really, really overcome lots of challenges. So if you have that creative, optimistic way of thinking, well, how hard can it get? We'll manage when we get to that way, and have a somewhat of a proven track record of overcoming problems, I think that's really enticing.
Indeed. And Hannah, what are your three favorite books on technology or investment, the three that have left a really lasting impression on you?
I think there's books that I've read, and then there's more the philosophical ones that kind of hasn't really given me the tangible proof that this is something that I can take back. But one example is, of course, Thinking Fast and Slow with Daniel Kahneman or something like that. And I think Hacking Growth by Sean Ellis is someone that I've keep on going back and repeatedly read. And then Predictable Revenue is one of those super nerdy books that I always recommend any sales leader to read.
I haven't come across that one, Predictable Revenue. Yeah. Who's that by?
It's basically the sales Bible of Silicon Valley. It's what it's called. I think Aaron Ross has written it. It's pretty nerdy. I love it because I'm a sales leader at heart and spent my career kind of trying to always kind of really, really develop that skill further. But I think if there's three books that I keep on going back to is those three, but I'm a book nerd, so I try to absorb as much as possible.
It's been wonderful spending time with you today, Hannah. You certainly amplified my knowledge of the Nordic B2B SaaS venture scene. And I wish you and the team and the portfolio huge success over the coming years.
Well, thank you, Gary. Thanks for having me, and thanks for a good conversation.
This episode of the Startup to Scale Up Game Plan was brought to you by Alpina Search. Head over to www.alpinasearch.com for advice on scaling your technology startup and recruiting high-impact senior talent.